You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Benedict Jones.
And I'm Erin Wagermiller. This is the Daily Local News from Monday, October 1st, 2018.
The whole criminal justice system is a broken system in a way. And it's been broken by the two major parties in collusion with each other.
Later in the program, WFHB correspondent Michael Glab speaks with Mark Haggerty about the Monroe County prison system. That's coming up on today's edition of Big Talk Extra with Michael Glab.
Also coming up in the next half hour, did you know that the League of Women Voters puts together a nonpartisan profile of all the candidates running for office? The Keys to the Candidates, coming up in A Minute of Civics, a guide to November's elections. But first, your daily headlines.
Indiana Senator Joe Donnelly backtracked on his position to Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh on Friday. Donnelly's office released a statement shortly before noon on Friday announcing that the incumbent Democrat would oppose Judge Kavanaugh's nomination to the nation's Supreme Court. Later that afternoon, Donnelly told the Times of Northwest Indiana that he would oppose Kavanaugh's nomination without an investigation by the FBI. Kavanaugh is accused by three women of rape and sexual assault over a period spanning three decades. Over the weekend, the White House authorized a limited investigation by the FBI into the allegations. After pushback by Democrats, President Trump authorized the FBI to investigate all three claims of sexual misconduct this afternoon, according to the New York Times. The authorization of the FBI's investigation comes with a stipulation that the investigation conclude this week. Donnelly was one of three Democratic senators up for re-election in states that Trump won in 2016 to confirm the president's previous Supreme Court nominee, Neil Gorsuch. Republican Senator Todd Young has stated he will vote for Kavanaugh's nomination regardless of the investigation.
Some absentee ballot applications mailed by the Indiana Democratic Party are faulty. That's according to Indiana Secretary of State Connie Lawson's office. Lawson, a Republican and the highest elections official in the state, says the Indiana Democratic Party mailed out absentee ballot applications that were missing state-mandated instructions. According to the Associated Press, potentially hundreds of thousands of Democratic absentee ballot applications did not include information required by state law. The Secretary of State's office approved the use of the Democratic absentee ballot applications on Friday. However, Lawson stated that some individual county election officials have acted to disqualify the ballot applications. At a news conference on Friday, Lawson stated, quote, "It's up to the county election board to decide. We know that some counties have rejected the applications and some have accepted them," unquote. Political parties regularly provide absentee ballot applications, but the Secretary of State's office alleges the Democratic absentee ballots do not include guidance on how and to whom an application may be submitted. Instead, it tells the applicant to address their absentee ballot request to the Democratic Party's headquarters. Democrats say that's done so the applications can be reviewed to make sure they are properly filled out. The party later turns them in for voters. But the AP reports it could also be advantageous for state Democrats, providing a metric of who is engaged and where to focus their get-out-the-vote efforts. Lawson did not identify which counties have rejected the applications, but said that there were a handful of them. Voters can check their registration status online at indianavoters.in.gov.
Indiana's highest-ranking education official will not seek re-election. Superintendent Jennifer McCormick announced Tuesday that she will not run in 2020. McCormick, a Republican, is in her first term as superintendent after ousting Democratic predecessor Glenda Ritz in 2016. McCormick has at times been at odds with Republican leaders when it comes to education policy. That includes her support for increased scrutiny of charter and voucher schools receiving state funding. Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb signed a law last year that will make the superintendent of education an appointed position beginning in 2025.
Monroe County bars and restaurants are slowly stepping up to pay the county's new food and beverage tax. Chief Deputy Auditor Chris Munch reported on the collection effort to the Food and Beverage Tax Advisory Board last week.
The August numbers, we collected $253,550.69 with 298 entities reporting that month. That's 8 more than we had last month. That brings our grand total up to $1,354,564.60. This also brings our grand total of different entities that have reported throughout since we started up to 335, which is about 15 more than we had last month.
County Council Member Shelley Yoder chairs the advisory board. Yoder asked Munch about the roughly 80 businesses who should be collecting and reporting the tax, but aren't.
Have we signed up any additional?
Yes.
People.
Kathy has actually been going out to these businesses and talking to them. And last month we said we had about 80 that weren't paying yet. Mm-hmm. She says she's reached about half of that and gotten people to either sign up or say they're going to sign up.
The Monroe County Council passed the 1% tax on prepared food and drink to fund an expansion of the Monroe County Convention Center. That tax went into effect in February. But the collection effort has proved a time-consuming task for Monroe County Auditor Kathy Smith's office. City Controller Jeff Underwood says he and City Attorney Philippa Guthrie are working with the Indiana Department of Revenue on a solution.
The problem is the legislation that was written is very specific that the county auditor can have access to the detailed information, the only person. When we met with DOR about a month ago, they indicated that they would work with the city and the county to read me in so that I could get the detailed information. I would have to sign the same document as the auditor did, and then we could work together to try and come up with a plan on divvying up responsibilities about contacting people, of working with the DOR, and as well as looking at the splits. Some of the problems is like Kroger's, they may have five locations, and they report that as a consolidated return. Now, they keep track because the Department of Revenue assigns a location code for each business that's under a common reporting number. So we have to find out if that, my understanding was that got reported at least once a year to the Department of Revenue. So it may be that the actual reconciliation happens after the end of the fiscal year, the calendar year, to get that exact breakdown between city and county. But the whole idea is to be able to add resources to the auditor to assist her in looking at that information, providing you the breakdowns that you desire without breaking the confidentiality agreement.
The auditor is mandated by the state to distribute the food and beverage tax revenue every month between the city of Bloomington and Monroe County. To give the auditor clear direction, the board recommended a 90-10 split. The city will get 90% of the revenues, and the county will get 10%. Mayor John Hamilton and City Councilor Steve Volan said if the ratio isn't accurate, the distribution can be reconciled with the state's Department of Revenue.
I mean, the adjustment would be one month. It could all be done within 1 month payment, though, right?
Yeah.
If you had a reconciliation.
Right. Yeah. But that would happen sometime in February or March, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
County Commissioner Amanda Barge pointed out that the city and the county still don't have a memorandum of understanding in place on the convention center expansion. Barge expressed concern the tax is being collected and distributed without a clear plan for spending it. Barge, Yoder, and Volan discussed the issue.
I would urge you to consider that there's little harm in actually doing the distribution here now. There still needs to be negotiation as to what to do with the money.
I
and again,
that.
You certainly have my commitment as a city council member that I'm not going to approve any spending of that money until we have an understanding of what it's being spent on and how. So that's just me.
Sure.
It's completely reasonable.
The spending of the actual money would first be, would come before this.
Yeah, it would have to be appropriated.
Right, that has to come before this. Then to the bodies, yeah.
It'd have to be appropriated, yeah.
Okay.
I'm just anxious about this.
Yeah. All of these items, and I feel like we have a lot of plates sort of in the air, and we don't have a lot of commitment, and that concerns me that people are paying this tax, and I'm totally understanding what you're saying with respect.
I also think people can take solace in the idea that this tax is limited to very specific uses by statute. It cannot be used for other purposes without a two-thirds majority of the body approving fiscal matters. So that's even more than the regular standard for passing things.
City Council Member Steve Volin suggested the 90-10 split would be limited to 6 months, after which it would be revisited. The board agreed. The next meeting of the Food and Beverage Tax Advisory Board is scheduled for October 23rd. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Benedict Jones.
And I'm Erin Wager-Miller. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Support for WFHB comes from listeners like you and from the IU Health Foundation, where local gifts stay local, serving patients for a healthier Bloomington. Mark Haggerty has spent more than a few nights in jail as an adult. A social justice advocate and citizen journalist, he has found himself in trouble with the law several times over the years as he has fought to bring attention to what he sees as the ills of modern society. Haggerty helped found New Life, New Leaf, a nonprofit prisoners support group that ran the addiction recovery program in the Monroe County Correctional Center until last year. He continues to speak out about conditions inside the county jail, as well as the justice system that, in his view, are stacked against certain groups of Americans. He joined host Michael Glapp on last week's Big Talk. The conversation continues on this week's edition of Big Talk Extra.
You are a big one for prisoners' rights.
Well, yeah, having been incarcerated numerous times for protest activities, I came to realize what the criminal justice system was and what it did to people. And
what does it do to people?
Well, it selects for the poverty-stricken and forces them to pay for their own supposed rehabilitation and their families. It impoverishes the families. And most of the people in jail here are just are poor people, and they don't belong in jail. They could make bail, they would. Or
I found a quote from the jail commander, Sam Crow. About 90% of the current inmates in the Monroe County Correctional Center have an addiction issue with either alcohol or other substances.
A lot of people don't pay much attention to the criminal justice system, and it's a huge industry.
So why should we? What? Hey, they committed a crime. They should pay their debt to society. Isn't that the way to look at it?
Well, yeah, that's kind of a way to look at it, but a lot of people in there are just awaiting trial, so they're presumed innocent. Some people are in there just awaiting prison.
Yeah.
Some are kids that got drunk over the weekend, and there's a lot of people in for many different reasons, and then most of the people in there do have addiction problems. It's not a properly used place, and the actual architecture of that structure is not conducive to rehabilitation.
Mm-hmm.
There's a whole bunch of things about it, lack of fresh air and sunshine being
right.
One of the major ones.
Do the inmates ever get to go outside?
Not really outside. There's a yard up there that has a hole open to the roof about 30 feet above them, 20 feet above them.
Sort of like a skylight.
Yeah, it's kind of like a skylight, only it's open, and it rains in there. So that's what they call outside, but very, very limited. I mean, it's a very, very overcrowded place. It's much more overcrowded than is reported.
I understand the jail's capacity is 294, and it's generally, the population is well over 300. This is no secret. This has been admitted by Crow and by Sheriff Brad Swain.
There were 338 last week.
There were 338 last week.
Yeah, or the week before.
Are there more prisoners in each cell than there should be?
A lot of people are sleeping on the floor, and it's more and more and more overcrowded. And the more people you press in there together, and they're young males too, so you have the problem of they're sick. They were drunk, maybe they were addicted, but now they're depressed and going through withdrawal.
Yeah.
And the only people around them are people who may not have the best therapeutic intentions towards them.
Yeah.
We've lost our community's recovery program, which was the intention of our community to help resolve that thing. The jail commander and the sheriff decided to go the professional route and have the court system and the center stone handle everything because they got a bunch of money for it.
Apparently you were one of the founders of New Leaf, New Life, which was an organization that ran a program, Addicts in Recovery.
Yes, that's true.
And you folks were doing that up until about the spring of 2017.
Yeah.
What was that program all about? What happened?
Well, the original thing was there was a guy named James Borden.
Uh-huh.
And he was brought up to the Bloomington jail from Bedford right after his father had died, just a few hours after his father had died. And he apparently was a little delirious, perhaps on the pills that the VA had given him. He was a 47-year-old Navy veteran. And he was transported to the Bloomington jail, and he was tasered to death in the intake portion of the jail. And it was got on videotape, and he, for not following orders, didn't do anything violent. Of course, they said that at first, but the videotape showed that he was just completely victimized by the police. So I started investigating that as a journalist, as I saw the name way in the back page of a Saturday's paper. The HT said, a man dies in police custody. And I thought, well, it must be Kentucky because it was in the region. It was in the region section of the paper back then. I thought it must be Kentucky, but it says Monroe County. And I said, well, he died in police custody in Monroe County Jail. And it said his name was Borden. So I found a Borden phone book, and a third Borden in Bedford.
Yeah.
I hit was his mom, and they said, oh, they killed Jimmy. They killed Jimmy. I said, oh, my God, what happened? He said, oh, yeah, I talked to his brother, Steve. He knows the cop that went up there with him. So I researched the story very clearly, and what it ended up was Steve Sharp, who was sheriff at the time, gave us a recovery program in the jail, partly because he needed a recovery program in the jail. And we had a successful model that came in from Virginia that we took over in a couple of years, but partly because he wanted a civilian presence inside that place, and he gave us an office inside the jail. It was a place where people that were incarcerated could report to somebody that was actually a civilian and not part of the military structure of that, of the jail. But I would say overall, the whole criminal justice system is a broken system in a way, and it's been broken by the two major parties in collusion with each other, not just the Republicans. The Democrats, too, Bill Clinton and those people stand guilty of these horrible sentences that are imposed on addicts that are acting out of their addictions, selling drugs to their friends and to a cop.
And there was the three strikes, you're out deal.
They got life imprisonment for that. And just fill in our jails and everything with people that should be going to classes, going to work, getting exercise every day. And then if they do that, if they go to classes and go to work and get exercise every day, they're tired and maybe watch some TV and go to bed, then they start entering a normal restorative life cycle that's reformative for them.
Yeah.
And when we don't do that and we lock them all up in a huge group where the people don't even have room to sleep and don't have classes to go to, and they say, well, we have classes. They have one classroom for all...
More than 300.
Yes. Yeah. And then it's only in use during certain hours of the day. So, you know, it's a joke, and nobody really wants to know about it. And if you do want to know about it, they give you like a PR run through by the jail and Sam Crow and the sheriff, and everybody shakes their hands, and the judges are all, everybody wrings their hands because it's in terrible shape. But there's no leadership there, and there's no vision of how to change this kind of facility into a facility that would actually be a reformative. There's not even any discussion about that.
That was Mark Haggerty speaking with Big Talk's Michael Glab. Full episodes of Big Talk air Thursdays at 5:30 p.m. right here on WFHB.
Support for WFHB comes from Lauren Wood Builders. Lauren Wood Builders is a family-owned company that sources local materials and local craftsmen to minimize environmental impact and sustain community. More information is available online at laurenwoodbuilders.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
A Minute of Civics is produced by WFHB in partnership with the League of Women Voters of Bloomington-Monroe County.
This is Ann Birch with the League of Women Voters of Bloomington-Monroe County, and I am here today with George Hageman, who is also with the League.
Hi, Ann.
George, as we approach the beginning of early voting, voters are confronted with all kinds of races and candidates for office. We may not recognize the names of the candidates. How do we make informed choices when we go to the polls?
That is exactly one of the core missions of the League. The League offers help to all the voters of Monroe County. What are your questions? What is it you want to know?
First of all, where can I get information about the candidates?
One of the best sources of information is the League of Women Voters' Keys to the Candidates, which is published in our local newspaper, the Bloomington Herald-Times.
Tell me about the keys to the candidates. What is it exactly?
The keys to the candidates is basically a questionnaire. The League asks candidates who are running for office about their experiences and qualifications, as well as their priorities if elected.
Do the questions favor either Democrat or Republican positions?
No. The League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan organization advocating for voters to be informed.
How many candidates are running for office in Monroe County?
In the upcoming fall elections, about 110.
My goodness, how do I decide among so many candidates?
Don't worry, not all these candidates will be on your ballot. Many of the races are not countywide, and the ballots are different according to where each voter lives. Ballots are based on county, township, precinct, and school district. For example, if you live in Clear Creek Township, you'll have the candidates for Clear Creek Township offices on your ballot, but not those of Washington Township.
Can I find out who is on my ballot before I go to the polls?
Yes. You can look it up online by going to indianavoters.in.gov, or you can go to Election Central at 401 West 7th Street in Bloomington and get a sample ballot. We'll be talking more about sample ballots next week.
Are all the candidates on the ballot featured in the keys to the candidates?
Nearly all of them. Exceptions are the Secretary of State of Indiana races for Secretary of State, State Treasurer, and State Auditor.
I know that some races have only one candidate running. Do they answer questions too?
No, as they are running unopposed and are extremely likely to be elected, they aren't included. It should be noted that some candidates opt not to participate in the keys as well.
I'm also confused by referendum questions.
Well, these are questions being put to the voters for consideration. The League does not list referendum questions in the keys to the candidates. If a referendum is on the ballot, voters will need to study the related issue and then decide how to vote on it. That's why it's a good idea to look at your ballot in advance.
When will the keys to the candidates be available?
The Herald Times publishes the keys on the Thursday before early voting begins. This year, as early voting starts on October 10th, the keys will be published in the Herald Times on October 4th. And the keys will also appear in the online version of the Herald Times.
Will all the questions and answers be printed in the Herald Times?
No. There are too many of them. However, you will find the entire keys to the candidates in the online edition.
Are there other resources that will publish the keys?
Yes, absolutely. The keys will be posted on the League of Women Voters website, and the Monroe County Public Library will post it on their, quote, Be a Voter, unquote, website.
I'm feeling much better about this, George. I'm really looking forward to reading the keys to the candidates. Thank you.
Glad that I could help, Anne. This is so important. We hope everyone will read the keys and become well-informed voters.
A Minute of Civics is produced by WFHB in partnership with the League of Women Voters of Bloomington, Monroe County.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin and Sarah Vaughn in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab, and that last segment was A Minute of Civics by the League of Women Voters, Bloomington, Monroe County.
Our engineer is Wes Martin. Our theme music is produced by Ben Lumpstein, Scott Schmadeke, and Danny Graff. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Aaron Wager-Miller.
And I'm Benedict Jones. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news at WFHB.org.
Stay tuned for KiteLine, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system. Coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcasts of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.